As long as we don't talk about the movie.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Rust is Gold Racing Podcast, episode number 6. We're here at Rust is Gold Coffee with Tyson Hollywood.
How you doing?
And a really special guest, Ciano Mays.
Hello.
We're excited that Ciano's here because we're going to talk about music and caffeine and gasoline.
Down the way, not too far, an old-time rockabilly coffee bar. Wrecking machine tucked in the back. Elvis singing about a Cadillac. I'm on a BSA, been riding all day. Leather's on, goggles too, triumphing, I don't know what you want to do. My boys are on Ducatis, happen now all the while. Yeah, these are rockers, it's their style.
So let's ride.
We got Ciano here, and he's going to be talking about music and guitars and movies and motorcycles, and it's going to be cool. We're going to have a good time today, right? He's staring at me blankly. I guess that means no. That
was I'm already having a good time.
That's kind of uncomfortable.
Where's Chris? I mean, that's the whole reason why I agreed to do this show.
I know. Everybody does this show because of Chris.
Hopefully he went somewhere cool.
He went camping.
Ah, okay.
He got a sort of vintage RV in California that was full of Black Widows. Seriously. It had been sitting there. I think he said it was his uncle's. And brought it back from L.A. a couple of weeks ago. And had to get rid of all the Black Widows.
He comes across like all the coolest things. People just give Chris stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I think 90% of all the things he has, he was just given.
Yeah.
Some of those are cool bikes and whatnot, but yeah, he's a good guy.
We call him Sparky, and he gets embarrassed when we talk about that.
How do you get that nickname?
Because he's constantly shocking himself, and it's not even a joke. I've seen him shock himself at least like 5 or 6 times trying to either like jump his motorcycle or check wiring. I mean, it's like he's a magnet for electricity.
Right. He shocked himself here one time.
Yeah,
remember?
He did.
We were doing the outlets.
Yeah.
And he was smart enough to jump back before he went into a coma.
We've got the motorcycle garage that we're putting together downstairs. That's Rust is Gold Racing Shop, right?
Okay, cool.
And below Tyson's coffee shop. And the electrical was a mess. So we got Chris down there. He started messing around with the outlets and as soon as he unscrewed one of the screws, shocked himself.
Sparks went flying.
Sparks everywhere.
Well, we miss you, Chris. Next time.
That's right, Chris. So tell us a little bit about your musical background, man.
Wow, okay. Like how far back in the background?
You go back as far as you want.
Well, I was born a poor child. No, actually, music for me kind of goes back to... It's probably one of my earliest memories, believe it or not, and goes back to my mom's sister, so my aunt, Gloria, and she had this cool, like, late 60s, early 70s Volkswagen Bug.
Cool.
Or I guess they would call, what they called it, a Super Beetle or something like that. And, you know, only the flat, you know, windshield and stuff, and it was purple. And I just remember, like, a purple Bug. And so... She tells me the stories of when I was like a little baby, and they'd put me. They didn't really have car seats back then, and so
how far ago is this?
Yeah, let's just not talk about the year.
Did it have a hole in the floor, and you can see feet running on the ground?
Did you guys crank the motor by hand?
Oh gosh!
Just go ahead. Yeah, sorry.
So needless to say, yeah, it was a cool ride, and they had those little, you know, those little bassinets, right, that your new mothers would carry their babies home in. And my mom was a full-time student and working full-time, and so, you know, and I was the last of 4 boys, and so my aunt would take care of me often, and so she would go drive over to our place and pick up the little bassinet that I was in and stick it on the floorboard of the front seat of her Volkswagen Bug. And, you know, because it was nice and warm and there's probably some good fumes going there, whatever. Caffeine and gasoline. And there was always music playing. She was like my earliest memories are AM Gold. Mm. You know, so anything from like, I'll go ahead and put a year on it, we'll say the 70s, okay? So 70s music cranking through these little tiny 3 or maybe 4-inch max speakers in the Volkswagen Bug. and I'm this little baby listening to stuff. And as I grew older, you know, she and I have always had a really good relationship and stayed close. And so when I was, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, she was always babysitting me. And you know, we'd be cruising down, you know, Wantabo or right here on Eubank in Constitution where Russ's Gold is, because she lived just down the street. We'd be cruising down here listening to ABBA. You know, cranking out, you know, just that
ABBA,
that AM gold.
Wow.
You know,
I was picturing a lot of Jim Croce for some
even
reason.
Even that. You know, because Loggins and Messina.
Yeah. Oh, well, that explains a lot, actually, because I know you're a huge Loggins and Messina.
Absolutely. So, you know, that's kind of where I think it started, and then continuing on that same side of the family, on my mom's side of the family, we would take these trips pretty much every holiday or every summer up to northern New Mexico to a little tiny town north of Las Vegas. I think it's northeast of Las Vegas. It's called Rainesville.
Yeah.
And in Rainesville lived my grandparents, my mom's mom and dad, and her brother lived there. And, you know, all the family would get together for these family events. And they would play some killer music. Tyson, you would dig the stuff. It's all, they would just bust out their guitars, you know, these old clanky Gibsons, play Hank Williams tunes, Hank Snow, wow. You know, just these old, really cool honky tonk. Yeah, Marty Robbins.
Wow.
So, in terms of influence, I mean, I think, like you said, it kind of explains a lot when you hear the music I'm doing now. At least from that perspective, is I had that honky-tonk country western kind of hillbilly music going on, and I had, you know, what was popular on the radio on AM at the time, and that sort of in me instilled two things for me with regard to music. One, that the song must tell a story, and two, it must be something that you remember and you want to hum along with and you want to sing along with in your car.
So do you think that kind of influences your own songwriting? Because I mean, a lot of your songs do tell stories.
Absolutely. I mean, it's something that I always aspire to. So, you know, when I set goals for myself with, you know, with songwriting, I try and go big, right. You know, and it's, you know, music's changed a little bit because, you know, a lot of people throw shade on the new country music, because they have an affinity for, like me, what they grew up with, and that sort of style of storytelling. I'll probably come out and be the guy to contradict that a little bit, because I think that music has to continually evolve. Mm-hmm. Yes, sure. I love that old stuff, and I love guys like Wayne Hancock, right. You know, Hank III, right. Guys that are still doing that old style. They do it with a little bit of their own flair, and they do modernize it a little bit, but they stay true to the roots. But, you know, there are some really great, we'll call it pop country artists who are doing some cool stuff too, you know, and I think what it comes down to is if the driving force behind your music is creativity and it comes from an honest place, then that should be all that matters.
That's really kind of a cool analogy for vintage motorcycles and cafe racers, I think, now as well, because we've talked about this many times, Tyson and I, about how, you know, there's the true purist, you know, British motorcycle guys that consider themselves rockers, that think that unless you're riding an old Triumph or Norton or BSA and you're in the full rocker gear and, you know, you're not paying homage to the British culture, that you're not a rocker. But everything evolves, you know, and like the early music genre that you can, you know, you can pay homage to, you know, in totally. A modern right. way. It's the same thing with the bikes. You know, we got Japanese bikes and German bikes and American bikes that are cafe racers in that style, and, you know, we're paying homage to the old school culture.
And I think that's the biggest part of it. As long as you recognize the roots, right, and
right.
the history.
Yeah, totally, yeah.
And you learn from that, and it, like you said, with some modern stuff,
right.
and it's expand from there.
It's got to be an evolution.
Right.
Before Hank Williams came along, it was really just, you know, a lot of gospel and a lot of blues. He took that and took it to a whole different level. And so I imagine if we were to travel back in time and look at purists of that era, they might have shunned him. His music was, it was good, so it transcended those notions of negativity, and he really popularized something that was new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I'm not saying that we'll look back on the music of today, the popular music of today, and go, wow, that's just classic. We might. But I think as long as it continues to evolve, then we're doing the right thing. And like I go back to, as long as it's doing something for you as a songwriter, for you as a musician, you as an artist, and you're connecting with people, then that's really all that matters.
I think more importantly, it's how are the people that like what you're doing receiving it? You're doing it for them because music, I mean, you're doing it for you because you
absolutely
like songwriting,
yeah,
but the people that really appreciate it are the people that respect what you're doing, and, you know, they listen to it and it changes some people's lives, right? I mean, like they can relate to the story or the songwriting and it gets them through a tough time. That's more important than like what critics say or what the haters say, right? And it's like motorcycles, same thing.
Yeah, but on another notion, not to, you know, disregard that, but I think there is a part of modern music that I feel like part of the soul is lost, you know, and maybe this is just me thinking about nostalgia and like Johnny Cash, but you know, when you hear of a song of Johnny Cash, like a storyteller, you have this larger than life figure. And I feel like with some of the more modern musicians, you know, there's not that figurehead that you look to when you hear that artist playing their music.
Generations are different though.
They are.
And there's a generation
of
kids that don't know who Hank Williams is,
exactly,
right? And they look to a modern artist who could be Lady Gaga.
Yeah.
You know, they could look to her and say, you know what, she changed, she made a difference to me.
Right.
Her music inspires me.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're dating ourselves, but you know, but there is going to be a generation of kids that lose that connection and they have a more modern icon that they look
to. And hopefully they go back to that, or, you know, go back to at least finding some artists that they respect and, you know, look up to and admire.
I think to echo on your point, because it is it's a great point, and I think what we're seeing right now is that two things. There's less dues for modern musicians to pay, if you think about it. Maybe not less. They're different, I would say. But they're, you know, it's instruments are accessible to people with the modernization of recording techniques, like using digital audio workstations. You know, we're recording this podcast right now on an iPad. You know, the tools are readily available, and so what happens is anybody and everybody can make music, and so what happens is it starts to saturate. So so you don't get the same level of quality. Now, there are people who have taken those tools and taken them even beyond.
Right.
And that I think is what's kind of inspiring is if you can find a way to use the modern tools, but really, you know, learn and hone your own craft and find a way to express your own personality, it'll definitely, I think, pay off.
I hope it does swing in that direction. And you know, from having several kids yourself, and two of which I've taught, which are great kids.
Thank you.
You know, I love your kids; they're awesome students.
Thanks.
But you know, it's weird, and I often tell this story. Being a teacher for the last 11, 12 years, when I first started teaching, I'd always bring a guitar into the classroom. I still have one in there, and Runar could probably tell you about this. And, you know, every once in a while I'd play a song for the kids if we had some downtime. But the first few years I was teaching, I always had a set of kids that would want to come in and play guitar with me during lunchtime. So we'd sit there for lunch break and teach them a couple of Ramones or Clash songs and stuff like that.
Very cool.
Over the years, those numbers started to dwindle.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a scary thing because, you know, there's trends and you see kids that kind of get into, I guess there was that show Glee that came out for a while, and they, you know, a lot of kids want to be singers.
Right.
But I'm afraid that I'm starting to see a lot of kids that aren't as musically inclined, or they don't want to pick up, or maybe even have the patience to pick up a guitar or a drum set and have that dedication. And, you know, hopefully that will change with, you know, generations. And, you know, we always see some awesome musicians that come out that are younger, but I'm, you know,
I'm kind of an optimist, you know. Yeah. And I think that the things that I'm seeing now are, I have a 15-year-old daughter, and I think her generation and a few of the kids a little bit younger now are starting to get back into that. I think they want to start learning an instrument again, you know. The generation that was totally new to digital media is kind of, you know, they're kind of like, yeah, okay, it was cool. We want to get vinyl now. You've seen this as a collector of vintage stuff. You know, vinyl's super popular. And I think that is a part of what's happening, a trend that's happening. Kids are starting to want to pick up a vintage guitar, you know, and they're wanting to pick up the drumsticks. I've got a couple of friends now that their kids want to play drums.
Yeah.
Man, I hadn't seen anybody who wanted to play drums in years, honestly. Yeah. And somebody who wants to actually play drums and not program it on a keyboard or synthesizer with or 808 or something, right? It's like now they want to actually play. And I think that's really cool. And I think that's that next generation, I'm hoping, is starting to pick that back up again.
Are you thinking that kind of technological, techno-based generation is kind of plateaued?
I think so. I don't think it's ever going to be gone.
Right.
But I think there's going to be a homogenization of it now. Mm-hmm. The kids that want to go back and pick up a vintage guitar and drumsticks, they're going to be able to record music now on an iPad.
Right.
So it's going to have to homogenize, right? And they're going to have to tie those two worlds together.
Right.
And I've heard some new stuff out there personally that I really dig. Like, there's a band called Greta Van Fleet. It's a bunch of kids from Michigan, right?
Yep.
And they sound like Zeppelin.
Yeah.
And they play their instruments. I mean, it's live, and they sound killer. I'm hoping that's kind of...
Robert Plant actually made a comment about Greta Van Fleet and said, he said, wow, they do Zeppelin better than Zeppelin does Zeppelin.
They almost do. I mean, it's great.
That would
it's
be good. Great to see, you know, kids get back into that. Even if it is 60s and 70s type of rock.
Well, I hope so. I mean, that's great.
To point back to that specific band as an example, you have a lot of people who are, again, kind of hating on them because they're like, oh, they're just kind of copying a style. But you've got to respect them for, whether they're copying it or not, for reaching into the vault, you know, and finding something that's pure and taking that as an inspiration.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of, you know, when I hate to use this as a segue, but it kind of makes sense because when you look at the film that we're working on, right, Caffeine and Gasoline, The Evolution of the American Rocker, it was a unique challenge to reach back into the history of music, specifically with rock and roll and motorcycles.
Yeah.
I mean, you just can't. The two are inseparable.
Inseparable, yeah.
It's absolutely like Caffeine and Gasoline, right?
Well, and just to take a step back, Ciano is my cousin. Our grandfathers were brothers.
Right.
Music has been a part of our family for generations.
Yeah.
Like a lot of musicians in our family. Our kids are into music. Both of us played music, recorded albums, had recording contracts.
We did stuff together.
We did stuff together. We've owned a recording studio together.
Yeah,
we go way back.
Oh my gosh.
As cousins and more like best friends and brothers. I mean, we're like,
you know, when you're cruising down the road and you don't have a tissue box. And you gotta pick one, right? And so you pick that booger, and you just can't flick it. I think that's kind of how we are. We just can't flick.
Am I the booger?
I don't know. I can't quit you.
Am I the flicker or the booger?
That's a terrible analogy.
That's a terrible analogy.
I was sitting there staring at him, going, "Where are you going?"
We gotta have a little comic relief.
Okay, so getting back to the discussion we were just on.
Well, yeah. My point was that. Ciano's been an incredible musician for as long as I've known him, which is a very long time, obviously. And when I started working on Caffeine and Gasoline and I wanted to have an original music soundtrack, I wanted to call on my friends, but I also wanted to have my cousin do the whole soundtrack and be the sound designer because of his original music ear and his songwriting skills and his performance skills. And it was like, it's perfect because I know how he loves motorcycles and I know what a great musician he is. I thought it was a perfect marriage of all of the things we've done for years to kind of bring that all together and try and work on a project that was bigger than both of us.
And we talked about it for a long time. I mean, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, we were building motorcycles together before the thought of the movie even came up.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I'm honored to be a part of it. To me, it's actually been... I didn't know how to feel about it at first, because I was a bit intimidated, you know. But at the same time, I felt like, what an honor, A, to be asked to do something that, you know, is really special to you, and that you've put so much time and effort into. And then I also thought about it, like I was saying earlier, you know, you kind of having to reach back into the vault to find some influences. And so the unique challenge of this particular soundtrack for the film was to break out of my comfort zone and compose music that was believable to be of a certain generation, a generation that I didn't live in.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I'm trying, you know, I was trying to recreate, you know, 40s and 50s and 60s music. I wasn't alive in those decades.
So let me ask you then, because that's the point that we're trying to get to, I guess, is that where did you get that? How far back did you dig into the vault? And what did you go through, old magazines, old movies?
Well, part of it was just, again, growing up having family that listened to music. So even though I grew up in the 70s and 80s, you know, a lot of the music that my family was listening to were, like I said, going back to Hank Williams and Hank Snow. So the, you know, late 40s, early 50s stuff, Count Basie, you know, some of the real early sort of bop movement stuff that happened, jazz, swing, just listening to those styles and kind of pulling back was a way to pull memories, you know, and turn them into musical ideas and musical concepts. And with that, I had to be mindful of the generation and be thinking about, well, what kind of instruments did they use? You know, what sort of recording techniques would they have used in those days? And so it was cool. If you could be a fly on the wall and see some of the stuff that I'm doing in the studio, you'd understand that, you know, it is a craft. You know, you have to. I went and found a bunch of vintage instruments. You know, I found old records, like you said, and listened and learned and studied and really became a student of not only the music but the techniques and the approach. Even studying a little bit about the history about what was going on with the end of World War II, and you know the plight of you know, soldiers returning and just, you know, having that whole, all those stories that came together, it was like a mashup. You know, that's the best term I can think of. It's everything.
And so how long did you actually research, and then how long did you write for? And when did it all kind of come
together? I can say that I've been researching my whole musical life, because everything I hear, I store in some way.
But
for
Steven's
But for Steve's film, you know, I think we talked about it maybe about 6 months or so before you guys were wrapping, I would say.
Yeah.
And
which is like a year and a half now.
Yeah. And so, but these things, listen, folks, if you're still listening to this podcast, great stuff takes time. And yeah, I mean, we spent that time sort of talking about it, and then Steve's been really great from a directorial and production standpoint, where he kind of gave me a direction and he cut me loose and let me be creative with it. And so that
Except for
whole
those
time,
two songs where I was like, dude, those really suck.
Well, we always have
That's not true.
We always have that back and forth. And that's the cool thing about working with my cousin, with Steve, is because I know where he's coming from. I know it's a genuine place. He is a musician. He understands and has a respect for what it takes to create music. And so there were times where I'd be working on something and I'd bounce it off of Steve, and I'd bounce it off other people too, but I really respect his opinion, because I know ultimately it's going in his film and he wants it to be the best as possible. But also because he understands, you know, just what those styles are supposed to be like. We have a very similar background in terms of, you know, coming up with music. So.
Well, the cool thing about that's the title song, Caffeine and Gasoline, is that I felt like, and for a lot of people, they have listened to the song and have watched part of the shows, they really felt like you kind of captured the essence of what it meant to be a rocker at that specific time.
It's actually Black Leather and Broken Dreams is the name of the song.
Right. Yeah.
But the hook is, caffeine and gasoline, which is, it was great. I love that song. And honestly, I mean, we're sitting here talking, and it gives me chills. I got chills thinking about the song because it's emotional to me on a certain level because it's so much of what we've experienced musically for so long and a project come together.
Well, not just you. I mean, and just to throw this out there really quick, when we had our soft opening this last weekend, Andy, De La O, and
Paul
from Las Cruces had come up.
Oh, really?
All the way from Las Cruces, and they came up for the soft opening. And you were playing Black Leather and Broken Dreams acoustically. Both of those guys were singing along.
Oh, were they really?
Grown men.
No kidding.
And I talked to Paul, and he's like, you know, I have this whole song memorized.
Yeah.
You know, and so...
Oh, that's cool.
I mean, on a...
That's humbling.
It is humbling. Yeah. And, you know, and they both mentioned that, you know, they've heard that song so many times. Yeah. They've got that stuck in their head.
Yeah.
And these are grown men.
Yeah.
You know, not to tote it too much, but they're grown
men. Well, that's
men.
My target audience.
Yeah. What middle-aged men. You know, the thing is that, like, for our group of friends and our culture...
Yeah.
You know, I think you really kind of hit the head on the nail on the head.
The flip side of that, though, is that, you know, my 15-year-old daughter and her friends have the song memorized, and they love it.
That's
good. To cross a couple generations like that is, I mean, that's saying something. To write a hook that a 14- and 15-year-old girl will sing and a 50- to 60-year-old man will sing, I mean, you've covered some ground there, bud.
Well, I you know, I always appreciate hearing that kind of stuff because, you know, as a creative person, and you guys know this, yes, you do it for yourself because you love to do it and it gives you your own personal fulfillment, but ultimately you do want people to like it. It's a, you know, it's like with anything, you know, when you're a little kid and you drew a picture and you took it to your mom and you showed it to her, you wanted that praise, you know? And so it's good and it's encouraging and thanks guys. Thanks for listening to the song. You know, give me feedback. I love hearing about it.
You know what I think would be cool is if you recorded it acoustically, just a solo acoustic one. And threw that like on the B track or on the
yeah.
track.
If I know this guy, he's already got a version.
You
of it? I'm serious.
Well, I usually start that way. It's funny, but a lot of times I'll start with just a little acoustic thing I record on the phone. And then I'll jump into the production part of it and turn it into something that's a little more fleshed out. But that song in particular, I'm glad people respond to it. It's cool, you know. Like you said, there's a lot of history in it. There's, if you listen to the lyrics really closely, it's not, you know, one for one. This is what happened back in the day. But there are little stories within it that make references to some things that,
right.
you know, are kind of inside knowledge about our experiences, you know, with building Cafe Erasers and
people we know.
People we know, stories that they've told us. You know, I mean, we you know, talk about Ace, you know, Rocker, you know, and some of the guys that have actually taken part as folks within the film. You'll see their interviews in the film, hearing some of their stories. I mean, it all comes together, and like I said, I'm honored to be a part of it, and hope that when the film sees its final and full release, whatever format it's in, that people will be able to connect with it, and hopefully become inspired to do whatever it is that they want to do, whether it's building cafes, Cafe Erasers. Whether it's, you know, picking up the drumsticks, you know, and banging on stuff and whatever. I just hope that people will see it and say, wow, if I just put a little, you know, sweat integrity into this, into what it is that I'm interested in, that it'll turn into something that other people can enjoy. It's I want to start this new hashtag called Play It Forward. All kind of surrounding music and just creativity in general, where... you know, we just try and inspire people to do more, to expect more of themselves, and then to put the effort in to go out and do it. And so, hashtag play it forward. We'll see.
Well, you know, that kind of thing is symbiotic, right? You know, creativity in general.
I mean, in terms of playing music or building motorcycles, we've been talking about this for years. It helps you grow as a person. And it also, like we mentioned, it helps your community grow, who you surround yourself with.
Yeah,
but there's also something inside of you that I think happens when you actually physically pick up an instrument and put in the attention and the detail and the time Same thing as building a motorcycle, right? It's hard to explain. You can't explain somebody the hours and the hours and the hours it takes to master a chord. Right. But you can explain to somebody what it feels like once you've done that.
Once you've
written that song and how good it feels to play that song.
And I think folks will be surprised once they start doing it, how quick those interactions start to happen and how quickly the synapses start connecting in your brain and how proficient you can become at something if you apply yourself.
Totally.
So it's about spending the time and
putting
in the work. Don't get distracted. Put all your stuff on do not disturb and take time for yourself to make you better.
Don't get discouraged.
Yeah.
I've watched Tyson putting the coffee shop together for 6 months, and obstacle after obstacle has been thrown in his way.
Right.
And he hasn't stopped.
And, just for myself speaking, having taught like both of your kids, you raised two awesome kids. Steve has raised two great kids.
Thank you.
And, knowing your kids for quite some time, it shows that you guys have been, good inspirational fathers. And I think that's something that we need to see more of in New Mexico. I think we need more people to take that leap and say, this is possible. Because, unfortunately, sometimes there's that there's that kind of a air that is kind of, amongst us that, discourages people.
Yeah.
New Mexico's a poor state. It seems like there's fewer and fewer opportunities for kids to get involved in music and to, art programs and things like that. And without delving into the political aspect of things, I mean, there's those things that are just inevitable and they're going to happen. But, good people doing, even mediocre people doing good things can sometimes have great results, and I'll be the first one to stand in line to say that I'm one of them. I don't profess to be a virtuoso at anything. I just love making music. And I'm going to continue to do it because it's just a part of who I am. And so if I can instill that kind of energy and belief into young people, then that's what I'm going to do.
So are your kids are they playing music nowadays?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I've got two of the four are both drummers.
That's awesome.
And so it's a pretty loud house most of the time. But I've never really pushed them into that, and but I've always just exposed them to it. So we're like my story. I'm a byproduct of what I was exposed to from the time I was a little baby in the bassinet, cruising around in the Volkswagen Bug with my aunt, listening to AM Gold. And that's sort of shaped and molded who I've become now. And so I put music in front of the kids. We've got an old turntable in the house that sometimes works, and we'll throw on.
Let me just segue. If it doesn't work, Jimmy is right over there.
Yeah, take it to percolator guitar
right over here. And hi-fi.
Oh, my God.
He's the master.
Yeah.
In fact, he's in there, I think, right now.
I think he's working on my guitar.
He's working on your guitar.
Hey, Jimmy.
He's actually working on my guitar right now. It's a total cool hang.
It's great.
I know you guys you have music in here periodically, and you're going to start doing your Friday night acoustic music series. I think that's going to be awesome. Hopefully I get to do one of those.
We'll put you on the list.
Okay, yeah, put me on the waiting list. I definitely want to be on.
You got to know somebody here to get in.
Yeah.
Well, to pull it all back to the music and stuff that we were talking about, that, on top of the songs that you've written, a lot of our friends have contributed music to it, original music, man. Some really great stuff.
Absolutely.
We got the Deluxe Band, the Despots, who we had on the podcast a couple episodes back.
Yeah. I want to get Jimmy on there.
Get Jimmy on there. My daughter is singing with you on a song you two co-wrote, killer, Kaylee.
Yeah, Kaylee did such a fantastic job on Fireflies. That in and of itself could be a podcast on how that song was created and how it just transformed. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. There's so much good music. It's what's cool for me is it's exposed me to other musicians around town that maybe I wouldn't have necessarily met because they're doing different styles or whatever. And I just have nothing but respect for the music that's in this film.
Yeah.
I think I think we have a future here with the rest of this gold / caffeine and gasoline tour.
Yeah.
Even like a show.
Yeah, no
all
kidding.
All the different bands that have contributed.
Oh, they're so good. You know, one of my good friends, Mario Rivera, who is from Albuquerque originally, was in a huge band in the late 90s called Left Unsaid. They had a couple record contracts. And, you know, he and his new band, Nights Like Thieves, is, you know, on the soundtrack. And it's just killer, you know? I love all the music on the soundtrack. And I just, you know, I love music. And so for me to marry the idea of film, because I work in the film industry, and I've always wanted to make films, to be able to marry that with the music that I love, with the people that I love, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, all the people in this film are my friends, they're my family, you know?
Yeah.
Tyson being, you know, a key component of the film, and hearing his story, which is a great, amazing American story. When you pour so much of yourself into things, you know, creatively, it emotionally...
Yeah, it's draining, right?
Draining, you know? But it's in a good way. It's like this outpouring of emotion comes out, because music, film, art, creativity is such an emotional thing anyway. And I'm emotional about creativity and art and music and film. So
I mean,
to me, it's like...
How could you not get emotional? I mean, you invested so much time and effort into this. And then on top of that, you brought together a community. And I don't know, I mean, maybe that wasn't the intention, but that's exactly what happened. And I think the other cool aspect of it is when you took on this project, it could have been for whatever reasoning you had or logic. Maybe it might have been a little selfish and like, I wanted to do this film and I want to showcase what I could do. But the end result was anything but selfish, right? The idea of bringing this story together and bringing this community together, and the lives and all the different people that it shaped through this film, I think it touched on all those different aspects. Think about all the artists that you talked about, all the musical artists. Those were local New Mexican musicians.
Yeah.
You know, all the different scenery that you captured in that film, that's all here in New Mexico.
Most of it, yeah.
You know, for the most part, other than England and Salt Lake City and stuff, and the writers and the stories, I mean, that's a... I think you should feel honored and proud, honestly, because...
I feel humbled, honestly, to have been able to have people willing to be so committed to something that nobody was getting paid for.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's a tricky thing, because I work in the film industry, and I work on multi-million-dollar movies, and I know how important money is to that industry, to be able to finance actors, to be able to finance equipment, to be able to make a project that sometimes is not so good, but millions of dollars are poured into it. In our project, you know, for people to come out and take time out of their day, multiple days, multiple hours, months, years now, and to keep giving back to this project is the part that, like, really, you know, that's the part that, like, emotionally, like, just makes me, like, overwhelmed. And that's really what it is. You know, like, Ciano has, you know, devoted a half a year at the very least to actually recording, and probably another half a year to the writing and thinking about it. Mm-hmm. Tyson's been involved in the project from the very beginning, which is going on 3 years in September, and never once when I've asked him, can you come out and let us film you shoot something, he's always been there. Always. Never once told me no.
I think when people see the film, they'll understand that. And they'll get a glimpse into how creativity, when applied with effort, can sort of transcend just the everyday that we're a part of. Because once you start telling a story that people can connect with, something that's familiar to them, then they really start to understand. They kind of get to the essence of you know, what it is that we're all here for, you know, and to different people, it's different things, but whatever it means to you as a person, I think when you see this film, you'll take away something from it that you'll be better for. It'll add something to your life.
I hope so.
And that's what's cool about being creative is giving people something that they didn't necessarily have before, or at least inspiring them to maybe go out and do something great.
Yeah, that's the hope, right? I mean, we all hope for that. Tell us more now about you, man, about the music that you're working on outside of the film. Because I know you've got a couple sponsors too, right? Like, and you do some work for a couple of manufacturers, guitar builders.
I can't sit still. I can't sit still. And so I've been working a lot recently with a very generous company. They're called CHC Guitars out in Austin, Texas. And the gentleman that runs that company, Chris Cordova, is actually from Albuquerque, so there's a connection there. And he and I actually used to perform music together, and we wrote some of my earliest music he and I wrote together back in high school, believe it or not. Well, anyway, fast forward through our lives of raising families and doing all the other stuff that we do that occupies years of space and time. He became more interested in guitar building and started doing really great things. And we recently reconnected, and I noticed just through other people, actually, what he had been up to. And I was so impressed that I had to have one. And so I reached out to him, and I was hoping that he would remember who I was. And of course he did. He's a fantastic guy. And it was, we started having conversations on the phone, and it was like time hadn't passed. And we started very quickly talking about, guitars and some of the things that I'd been looking for with the studio work that I'm doing, the music for film, even just some of the songwriting, some of the music I'm doing for other artists.
And don't be humble about it. You've got songs you've written that there are some Nashville recording artists that are interested in recording, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's always you're always putting your work out there because, it's important to get that feedback, and you definitely want, people to hear it on a broader scale. And I think sometimes shopping music to other artists is a good way to do that. For the longest time, I was trying to be an artist, a recording artist, meaning I wanted me to be the sole performer and be on the radio and go out and do the tours. But I've, in my maturity with music, I've learned so much about what it is that I truly enjoy about it, and that is the writing aspect of it. So I'm trying to get stuff out in front of other people. And Chris with CHC Guitars has really helped sort of behind the scenes, because he's providing me with some really great quality instruments that that inspire me. I mean, it's like you're talking about, if you, growing up, I was the kid that had the box of crayons that was like eight, crayons in it, and two of them were
some
black,
broken.
They're broken, whatever. And I always envied the kids that had, that nice 24 pack of Crayolas with the sharpener. There you go. And so now that I'm sort of in a place where I can start choosing the colors that I want to paint my music with, working with Chris at CHC has been a huge blessing, because he's helped me realize some of the things that I had been missing. My palette was so limited, and now it's really expanded quite a bit.
I'm curious, I'm intrigued, because what kind of style guitars are you playing with? Or is he custom making these for you?
He's a custom builder, and I had sort of been talking to him and having conversations about what it is that I had been missing in some of the regular instruments that you can find. So, like, there's Stratocasters and Telecasters and all kinds of great different types of guitars out there. What happened as a result of our conversations was I created a body design and a headstock design and a pickup configuration that felt really comfortable and more suited to the kind of music that I'm looking to create.
And so for the bass guitar player, can you give us
my number one guitar is a guitar that Chris built, and it's called the CM1, believe it or not. So my initials and the number one, it's the very first guitar we collaborated on together.
Wow. Yeah. Talk about
nobody makes guitars for me like that.
Yeah. So it's my signature guitar with CHC Guitars, and this is really cool because we've got an overwound P90 in the bridge position, so it's a hot pickup. It's got a five-way active pickup switching system. So what happens is, in the first position it's passive, and then in the second position it becomes an active pickup. So it's got a little bit more output, a little more grit to it. And then on the next three subsequent twists of the knob, it gets all the way up into highly saturated gain. So it's an extremely versatile instrument, because when you have it in the passive position, you can get that kind of strat sound out of it. Okay. Maybe even cool. A tele if you tweak things tone wise on your amp and stuff. But as you push it forward into the other positions, then you can really kind of get into the dynamics of more the rock and the heavy rock.
And the body style.
And the body style. Well, the body style is it's kind of a marriage of, I don't know, three or four other guitar body shapes that I like, and it's purely aesthetic. I mean, right. It's just, for me, it just has a look to it that's kind of rock and roll. It's kind of sexy, but it's a little subdued, so it's not over the top flashy. But it's a highly versatile instrument that looks really great. And if you go out to chcguitars.com, I think it is, there's some photos up there of the guitars. That one in particular, it's the blue one. You know, you can't miss it. It's really pretty. But again, it was a unique opportunity to create. And like I said before, I can't sit still. So this was an opportunity for me to work with probably one of the premier guitar builders and designers in the country, to sit down and work on an idea together that turned into something unique. I was very privileged to be able to meet with him a little bit before we built my first guitar. He came to Albuquerque. He actually measured my hands.
Are you serious?
Looked at several guitars that I have in my arsenal and asked me what I liked about them, what I didn't like about them, what would I change if I could, you know. So he gave me carte blanche on the design and the build, even down to the woods that we used.
Wow.
The type of material that we used for the frets. We're using Evo Gold frets.
It doesn't get any more custom than that.
It doesn't get any more custom than that. And the kicker about it is that he's still underground in a lot of ways. I mean, don't get me wrong. He has national touring artists and recording artists using his guitars.
Right.
But he's staying true to his craft. And you know, you can get into a custom guitar right now, as of the recording of this podcast, for a lot less than you would think. And so for people who are thinking about, it must be great to have your own custom guitar. You know, if I had, you know, several thousand dollars, I'd go do that too. But the reality is there are some great builders out there, and he's certainly doing something that I think is unique, and that's why I'm really, trying to promote his craft and his business, because I think if you're in the market for something like that, he's the guy to do it, and he'll get you there without breaking your bank.
So did you use his guitars when you were recording or writing songs for the film?
For the film, it's virtually his guitars exclusive, CHC guitars on everything.
Really?
Which was cool, because there were times where I needed a certain sound and I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to get it. But again, because we went into building and designing these guitars with the idea that they had to be versatile, really afforded me the opportunity to create those kinds of sounds.
That's so cool, man.
Yeah.
I didn't really know that, and it's kind of cool that we're talking about this now, because I just, you know, I knew you had an arsenal, and if you go into Ciano's studio, it's like a museum of guitars. I mean, there are racks and racks of electric guitars and pedals and amps, and it's like, if you're a gearhead, it's like, oh my god, it's heaven when you walk in there, right? So I knew you had a arsenal of guitars to pick from, but I didn't know you'd use exclusively.
It goes back to the box of crayons, and what's kind of funny about that analogy is that even though I wanted the box of 24, I go back to the 8 that are the primary colors. And they can blend enough to create. I've learned to blend. You know, I've learned to take colors and blend them together. I've learned to take colors and blend them together musically to create the picture that I'm painting with each song. And CHC guitars has really been the saving grace for that that approach.
Do you have your first guitar you ever got purchased?
The first guitar I ever purchased. Well, so my first guitar was, it's actually still my mom's guitar, and she still has it.
Oh, that's cool.
Nice.
And that was the one that I sort of cut my teeth on. It was an old Yamaha C50, I think, nylon string.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
And I was playing that thing. You know, I grew up kind of in my teenage years listening right. to Queensryche, you know, yeah. and bands like that. So I'm sitting here, you know, mashing away on this classical guitar playing power chords.
Yeah, I got to say, Ciano was the
penultimate.
He was
the ultimate
Queensryche fan club president
in New Mexico.
Was it New Mexico or Albuquerque?
I think
or?
So, yeah. It's been a couple
did
years.
Did you have the jean jacket with the patch on the back?
Had the jean jacket with the patch on the back, had, you know, multiple pieces of memorabilia with all their autographs.
The hair down to
the hair to my, you know,
chest.
Whatever. Yeah. Yeah, rock and roll.
Rock and roll, man.
What was it about Queensryche that influenced you so much?
You know, oddly enough, it was kind of the stories too. Yeah. I mean, it's always kind of been about that for any music I listen to. Even the stuff that I'm writing now that some would consider kind of, because I write in a lot of different styles, but I'm working on some songs right now that are kind of pop country.
Nice.
And so they're a little repetitive, you know, because that's kind of yeah. what popular music is doing a little bit. But I'm holding on to the story, so I'm writing songs that just continue to try and tell decent stories or something that'll get people interested and stay listening to it. What's going to happen next?
Right.
You know? It's that book you don't want to put down.
Well, you went to school at MI, right? Music Institute in Los Angeles?
I did.
And you worked at Capitol Records?
I did, oh, yeah. Wow. I did work at Capitol
What'd
Records.
What did you do there?
So it's kind of a funny story, but...
Was this in the 80s?
This was 90s? In the 90s. This okay. is in the 90s, yeah.
He's not that old.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he's old, but
that
he's not...
That was before the crash, though,
he's
right?
not as old as Jimmy.
Yeah.
Okay, there we go.
I was... Let's,
or
let's,
Steve.
For those of you...
Wait, who's younger?
Oh, if you've got to ask,
well,
that's...
Just asking.
I'm sorry.
Just asking.
He's way younger. Okay. He's Jimmy's age, I think.
Let's put it this way. If you know when the Northridge earthquake and the riots happened in L.A., that's when I was there. So there you go. Go Google it, yeah. and that'll tell you how old I am.
For
because
all you
I,
kids out there.
Yeah, I moved out
it
there.
It was 94.
I moved out there right after graduating high school. I mean, literally, I was 17 years old, and I... drove to L.A., you know, that typical story. I drove out there.
With your guitar. Really,
yeah,
your
with my drums, actually, because
okay.
I'm really a drummer. I always joke whenever I'm playing guitar for people in public, I say, you know, hey, I'm just so you know, I'm a drummer, in case you can't tell. But I went to PIT, Percussion Institute of Technology, which is a school that's within the larger program at Musicians Institute. And while I was living there and going to school, I was actually living with other musicians from Albuquerque who had moved out there a couple years before. And one of them, a really, really good friend of mine, God rest his soul, Eric, was Eric Sanchez. Later went by Eric Dickison. But anyway, fantastic drummer in a great local band from Albuquerque. They moved together to LA as a band. And I moved in with them when I came out there, and they were like kind of my big brothers. Well, anyway, he was working at Capitol Records, and I was delivering cookies for Granny Annie Cookie Company. And I've got some stories to tell about that, but some of the interesting seedy places that would order
cookies.
Cookies, yeah, homemade cookies. Now, like, just for an example, one of the places I delivered cookies to was a quote unquote call center. So think about what was popular in the 90s. You know, you're watching TV at 2 in the morning and the commercial
yeah.
comes on, the scantily clad, you know, yeah. Woman saying...
Phone sex operator.
Okay.
Hey, anything works in LA, right?
So anyway,
Hollywood, man.
I'm delivering cookies to these places. And for those of you guys out there that call those numbers, you'd be surprised to know what they look like.
Do people even use those phones anymore?
I don't know.
It's the internet, man. You got
internet,
the internet.
Yeah. Yes, the internet, yeah.
No more cookie delivery.
Generation.
Yeah. Anyway, so long story short, the guys felt sorry for me, and they hooked me up with a job at Capitol Records. I was working in their tape library, which was so cool. It's almost cool. I don't even know if those things are in existence anymore. But the tape library, just for those of you listening, that was the place where they held all of the master tapes for recording. If a band went into the studio and recorded, they recorded on these big 2-inch master tapes, and then they would get stored in a vault because the record company owned that master tape. And that's where I worked. And so it was kind of cool because through that experience, I had so many wonderful stories of different producers and engineers, and even the artists themselves would come in to check out, like a library, their master tapes, to take them to the studio and do some more recording, and then they'd bring them back and check them
That's
in.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. But I actually held the master tapes for the Beatles' White Album in my hands. Yeah.
Wow.
And so, yeah, I'm getting goosebumps talking about that. But, you know, just to have those kinds of things to look back on is really privileged. Yeah, so, you know... working for Capitol Records. That's what I did there. And then, you know, after a while, I was, you know, getting more connections in music and stuff. And I kind of decided that LA wasn't really my scene, as it were. You know, I wasn't really into a lot of the stuff that was going on during that time. And so I decided to move back to New Mexico, and that's kind of when you and I reconnected again with some things, some projects we were doing here. We started the studio, the recording studio here in Albuquerque.
Yeah.
And, you know, Albuquerque's like that. It's one of those places where you can move away from, but it's an old soft shoe, and you can always come back to
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. I tell the story of you and I up all night for 3 days recording Cordell Boogie and Gary Scheider from P-Funk. I was telling these guys last night, actually, about that, and what an insane weekend, 3-day weekend that was.
The guys from P-Funk are kind of, they're crazy, but that was kind of another reason why I started to take guitar playing a little more seriously, because they came in, and you got to understand, people, when a big recording artist comes into a recording studio and they ask you if you can do something, you say what?
Yes.
You say yes.
Right.
So
now,
they asked me, the guy who was helping engineer with Steve on some of their music, if I could play guitar. And I was like, hell yeah, I can play guitar. You know? I play my mom's old Yamaha, you know? Power chords. Yeah. But they asked if I would play a little piece on something they were recording. And I don't think it ever got released or anything. But you know, just that experience, you know, was so much fun, and it pressured me to kind of push my boundaries, and I look back on that now and I'm kind of thankful for it in
Absolutely.
A lot of ways.
Well, man, thanks for popping by. I know you like coming here now because the coffee's awesome.
I do.
So. I can't get him out. I can't get him out of the way.
I heard
place.
You were here this morning.
I got my pink juice is what I call it now.
Nitro tea
at Rust's Gold. But I'll tell you what, if you come in and you ask for pink juice, they'll know exactly what you're talking about, and you can tell them that Ciano Mays sent you. And
pink juice.
Yeah, for your pink juice.
Well, thanks for popping by, man.
Cheers.
It's always cool hanging out with you, obviously.
And, make sure you come back. We're going to get you on the set, right? Set list.
I want to.
Yeah.
I want to.
Anybody wants to follow Rust is Gold Coffee and rustisgoldracing.com? Got an event list up there. It talks about all the cool things we're going to be doing here at the shop. The coffee shop and the motorcycle shop. On June 21st, we're going to have the first Americano Music Series performance. It's Screen Door Slammers from Austin, Texas. They're going to pop in. They're going to play. We're going to have food trucks here. We're going to have music. We're going to have motorcycles. Ciano will be here drinking his pink juice. Tyson will be here slanging espressos.
Yeah.
And pop in and say hi to everybody. Meet Jimmy. He's our head barista over here. Very cool guy.
Kaylee
and Sarah will be slanging espressos. And we just wanted to say that we appreciate everybody who's listening to this. Share it with your friends and family. There's lots of cool things happening here, and it would be a nice little background thing to listen to at the very least. And you might learn something along the way. Tyson, thanks for hosting this.
Thank you.
Here at the shop. And send us an email from the website if you have any topics or questions or want to find out more information. Ciano, did you want to say anything?
Just if you want to hear some music, head over to my website. It's SianoMaze.com, or follow me on Instagram. It's usually a little more entertaining. You never know what I'm going to post up there next. I'm also on Facebook, so I just want to meet more people and like I said before, help play it forward.
Tyson?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for coming out.
Appreciate thank you for it. Having me.
And Sparky, you were missed, man. We'll catch you on the next one.
Later,
see
buddy.
You all later. Peace.
Down the way, not too far, an old-time rockabilly coffee bar. Wrecking machine tucked in the back. Elvis singing about a Cadillac. I'm on a BSA. Been riding all day. Leather's on, goggles too. Triumphing, I don't know what you want to do. My baby's on a Vincent. Has been for quite a while. She said it's rocking just her style.
So let's ride.
So let's ride.
Turn up, I got love the Kims. American rocker is a matter of fact.